Are you feeling overwhelmed by hormonal changes? If you're a woman, you're not alone. With over 1,000 hormone disruptors in our environment, it's no wonder things can feel out of balance. On top of that, natural changes like PMS, menopause, and other life stages can leave you feeling tired, irritable, and trapped in a constant battle with your body. But here's the good news. You don't have to suffer through it. Hormone Harmony by Happy Mammoth is here to help. This herbal formula fine-tunes your hormones, balancing estrogen, testosterone, and even stress hormones like cortisol, which can contribute to weight gain, racing thoughts, poor sleep, and more. With over 40,000 five-star reviews and a bottle selling every 24 seconds, the results speak for themselves. Ready to feel like yourself again? For a limited time, get 15% off your first order at happymammoth.com using code NEXTCHAPTER at checkout. Visit happymammoth.com today and get your old self back naturally.
Your old or broken phone can let you down when you need it most.
Perfect.
But at Verizon, trade in any old phone from our top brands and get the most for it, up to $2,000 in value, for an amazing new iPhone 16 Pro with Apple Intelligence and a new line on my plan, and iPad and Apple Watch Series 10. That's like a 3-for-1. And you can get it on any plan. At Verizon, trade in your old phone for a brand new iPhone 16 Pro, iPad, and Apple Watch. The other guys won't give you that. Visit Verizon.com today. Additional terms apply. Service plan required for Apple Watch and iPad. Up to $2,000 value based on iPhone, iPad, and Apple Watch.
This coming Tuesday night, it is season 6 of Dark Side of the Ring. Joining us 60 episodes deep into the Dark Side of the Ring legacy, and now he's adding 10 more to his resume. Evan Husney is with us to chat about season 6. How are you, Evan?
Hey, how's it going, John? Glad to be back. Thanks for having me. I can't believe we're here, season 6. That's just crazy. 60 episodes of the show, I never would have thought. You know, when we first met, I never would have thought we'd be here for 6.
My first real introduction to this franchise was waiting in the media line at WrestleMania at MetLife Stadium, and flying above the stadium is promotion for the series that was coming up. I was like, wow, this series is definitely serious about getting some attention here. How far into season 1 did you guys realize, wow, we have captured something here with the wrestling audience? Because going into a series, you never know what the response is going to be.
Oh yeah. And not only that, there was such a dramatic buildup to getting this show on the air as well, because the regime at Vice, back when it was Viceland, the TV channel, just had no real awareness of the wrestling audience or how this was going to perform or anything. So it took a lot to convince them to actually air this series in the first place. That's like a whole separate documentary in and of itself, it could be. So there was a lot of just uncertainty of how it was going to work out. And I do remember when the first 2 episodes hit, the Macho Man episode and then going into the Montreal Screwjob episode, there just was this automatic, organic chatter around it. And then it was that 1-2 punch of, I think it was Hulk Hogan first had mentioned, like, you know, hey, I watched the show, brother. And, you know, and like he like gave it a rating of 5 out of 10, brother, you know, like mediocre, brother. And then it was like, OK, what the hell is he talking about? People went to go check it out. And then it was The Rock tweeting about it right after that. That also, I think, just put it. Then you have both these the two biggest wrestlers in the industry talking about it. And then it just kind of quickly escalated to yeah, just like the ratings jumping and people just getting in on it. But then, of course, season 2 took it to a whole nother level, I think, with, you know, it was kind of one of those, obviously, the unfortunate timing of COVID happening. But it also was a time everybody was home and watching, you know, and watching TV. And so then I think it was just, yeah, we had crazy ratings in season 2. And I think that really helped, you know, with the show.
When did you get the note that they wanted season 2? Was it like midway through season 1? Was it after the first season had aired? Can you recall?
I'm trying to remember. I think it was shortly after the first season had aired. And it was this whole idea of like, you know, running it back again. And I remember Jason and I at the time thinking, oh my God, like that's great. But the experience of making the first season was so difficult. And and it was, you know, we had very little money to do the first season. And I'm talking about just from the budget of the show. And it was almost an impossibility to make the show at that budget level. And so there had to be serious conversations of rebooting the entire budget and the process of doing it. So I think that took a long, that took a minute to figure that all out. But once we did, it was off to the races. And then we just never would have predicted that next level the show went after that, you know? So yeah, just crazy.
Well, as always, when you release the topics for the upcoming season, there's always certain ones that jump out at people for various reasons. This coming season, you're going to kick off next Tuesday, 10 Eastern on Vice with Hell in a Cell featuring Mick Foley and The Undertaker, followed by The Sheik, Ed Farhat, Tony Atlas, Muhammad Hassan, Eddie Gilbert, Vader, Daphne, Superstar Billy Graham, Ludwig Borga, and Billy Jack Haynes. I look at this list and several jump out at me. I think for a lot of kind of the newsletter crowd, I think Eddie Gilbert's a really fascinating figure. Let's start off just with Eddie Gilbert, because a lot has been made about his passing in 1995. The family has been very protective about the circumstances of his death. Tell me about navigating that one and sort of the people that you have reached out to for the Eddie Gilbert episode, because I think that's one that a lot of people have circled of great interest.
Yeah, which I'm really excited about, you know, because I think for a casual fan, you know, they may not be as familiar with Eddie Gilbert, but, you know, Eddie Gilbert's one of those figures in wrestling who is so influential. Like, you don't know, you might not know his name, but, you know, his everything in terms of, you know, what he was doing. You know, he was kind of a whole like generation ahead of where he was at when he was at his prime, you know, and just a really forward thinker for the wrestling industry. So I think it's a very exciting one for us to get into. It's one we've been wanting to do for a while. But yeah, navigating in terms of, you know, his passing and, you know, with his family. I mean, his brother Doug is in the episode, which was very important to us to have that family, you know, representation, but a lot of people who are close to him in the industry as well. And I think it's also a look at, you know, a big what if story, because I feel like had he not passed away, he would have been such a much more household name in wrestling. He would have been somebody that I'm sure would have had an influence during the Monday Night Wars. I'm sure, you know, he would have popped up in other places as the industry was only just getting hotter. You know, because he in that mid 90s era, as we know, wrestling kind of took a slump. But again, just such an innovative thinker, great mind for wrestling. And this just kind of channels and shows you how this how Eddie Gilbert's influence in wrestling is, you know, has reverberated through, you know, the more successful eras of wrestling. But yes, you know, his passing in Puerto Rico is definitely discussed in the episode. Don't want to give too much away because I want people to watch it. But yeah, I mean, this was an episode that we've always wanted to do, and it's exciting that we finally got a chance to do it.
I think you hit the nail on the head with the what if question. Like, here's someone 33 years old and very difficult to talk about Eddie Gilbert without mentioning Paul Heyman and just what the trajectory of Eddie Gilbert would have been. Not just wrestling, but more so of a behind-the-scenes role that could have been one of those significant power players well into the 2000s and even to this day may have had a very important role in whatever the industry would have became.
Totally. I mean, I just love to sort of imagine what Eddie Gilbert would have, what his contributions could have been to like Nitro, for example. You know, I just feel like he would have been suited for what was happening in 1996. You know, I could have seen him and bringing him in or being some sort of almost Brian Pillman-esque character in terms of trying to separate what, you know, is real and what's not and fact from fiction. And I think he was just one of those really smart minds who just understood wrestling on a level that few did, you know.
Can you definitively give us the pronunciation of Ludwig Borga, Tony Halima? Would that be the we've heard so many different pronunciations. This is the one for me I am most intrigued by, because I think if you just grew up and you were exposed for a brief time to Ludwig Borga, I mean, the greatest commercial for this episode is just reading this guy's Wikipedia page. Probably some fictionalized, some not, but everything from working as a singer, a stuntman, a coach, had a fascination with the U.S. after watching Taxi Driver. Somehow along the way decided, you know what, an SS tattoo might be the way to go for a career, and was a bodyguard for Cheap Trick. I cannot wait to watch this episode, because this guy, this was a movie come to life of a figure that was just, I think you could do a season on this guy if you so chose for HBO.
Oh man, totally. It's such a fascinating story, and like a lot of episodes this season, it's just one of those ones where I think fans on social media had been petitioning in ways for us to do an episode on him. And I don't know, for whatever reason, we just were like, I don't know, you know, I don't know why we didn't take some of these more seriously. So to all the fans out there who've sort of campaigned for this episode and some of the others that are we'll talk about in this season, it's like, I'm sorry, like we should have looked into this better. I mean, obviously we knew that like the bullet points about Ludwig Borga's story, but just didn't know how deep it went. And, you know, if you were to actually assemble like the people that would talk about this, more specifically the people, you know, based in Finland, like,
yeah,
then it really comes to life as an episode and you can really see its potential. So this one to me just kind of screams like, I can't believe we didn't do it sooner, because the story is just like so jaw dropping. but yeah, very fascinating. We sort of now, you know, we've had a rule here on the show that I like to refer to as the Hasbro principle, which is, you know, if a wrestler has a Hasbro figure, it's worth looking into to see if there's a story there for the show. And of course he does, you know, he was part of the last series of the Hasbro line and he's, you know, one of the more valuable, figures you can get. And so that's always been just kind of alluring to me is like, oh my God, like what is the story behind this guy? Cause you heard, okay, he might have these extreme, you know, white supremacist views. Obviously he has the SS tattoo. What's up with that? That's kind of the extent of what I had heard. And then the fact that he became a politician, but sort of tracking his trajectory after wrestling is really when things get super interesting. And he goes back to his home country after being deported from the US for like machine guns and drugs and all this stuff. He goes back to Finland to try to seek out, you know, the limelight. And as you said, he puts out an album, which is hilarious. He becomes like the equivalent of the American Gladiators over there. And he tries to do all these different things to kind of capture, you know, the stardom that he always craved. That was always something he was always looking for. And he decided to put out a book. And then in that book, he had these extreme, you know, right wing sort of, you know, rhetoric, you know, hate filled rhetoric that he was, you know, spewing into this book. And of course, politicians at the time, as there's like this mounting sort of swing to the right, anti-immigration, all this stuff, they're like, well, maybe this guy could be a mouthpiece for us because he's certainly doing a good job of keeping himself in the headlines. And they sort of took him in to this very extreme party and he gets elected and he becomes not only just elected to parliament, but he becomes one of the most voted people in like Finnish history. Which is just fascinating. I just never would have thought this, like, you know, kind of run-of-the-mill heel from the mid-90s WWE to have such a huge impact on, like, European politics. But he did. And so it's a fascinating story that I just can't believe we didn't look at sooner.
Were there family members that you were able to reach out to and contact for this one? And what are some of the challenges when so much of his story is based out of Finland and you have a language barrier?
Well, we were lucky because there was a Finnish documentary that was produced on Tony Halme. It hasn't really broken out beyond, you know, Finland or, you know, anything, but it's amazing. It's really well done. It's really well shot. It's a really well made documentary. And the crew who worked on that, we reached out to them and they actually helped us to do new interviews for the show. And we utilized some of the crew members on that film. And they, you know, so they were doing the sort of like on the ground interviews with us in tandem, you know, over, you know, Zoom and stuff like that. And they hooked us up with, Tony's like childhood friend, who grew up with him and kind of explains a lot of like, I don't know, just like where he's what made him tick in his early years and what kind of put him on this path. We talked to his first wife that he was married to in America. That was an interview we did here in America. And she was married to him right when he came over and was doing the whole, you know, Gold's Gym sort of thing that a lot of people were doing in pursuit of stardom around that time. And she illuminates a lot about him. We talked to a journalist in Finland who knew a lot about Tony and I think wrote a book on him. And then we talked to, I can't remember his name is escaping me right at this moment, but he's kind of the de facto, you know, he's the guy behind Finnish wrestling. Like, he's kind of put Finnish wrestling on the map. And so, yeah, we talked to a few other people. Of course, Jim Ross is in the episode sharing his reflections of, you know, Tony being in WWE, and Jim Cornette as well, too, you know, who managed him, I guess, for a Survivor Series match or something once upon a time. And so it's such a compelling, insane story. I can't emphasize that enough.
Yeah, it's the one to me that definitely jumps out of the topics that I think is going to be a really intriguing episode. Looking ahead to the premiere this Tuesday, it's covering Hell in a Cell from 1998. Obviously, for so many people, it's this incredibly memorable match. My question to you is, why do you think that this match has lasted the test of time when, since 1998, we have seen so many incredible stunts, but I don't think anything is going to reach this zenith of a match that you watch it and it's just this incredible spectacle that you're watching. And in real time, you're wondering, like, is this person going to live from this kind of experience? And I think it's interesting that Mick Foley has had this weird relationship with the match. I don't think it's the one he necessarily wants to always be remembered for, but it is, for many people, going to be synonymous with Mick Foley forever.
100%. And I think it's a lot of different factors why it continues to endure and why it's so fascinating. Again, I was watching it as it happened live on pay-per-view. And, you know, obviously as a kid, my jaw was on the floor. I had never seen anything like that. And I think it's just one of the matches that, I don't know, and there's not many that I would categorize in this sort of echelon with that one, despite what, you know, people may think about, you know, a more hardcore match or a stunt-based match like that. But the storytelling, the stakes, the sort of emotional roller coaster that it puts a viewer on, I think transcends wrestling in a lot of ways, for better or worse. where it always had been, and I know for a lot of other people, my generation and fans alike, it's the type of match you would put on to show somebody that you know in your life who's not a fan, and like, okay, you think this is a bunch of bullshit? You don't like wrestling? Well, watch this, you know, and then you just look at, then you're watching them watch the match, right? And I think part of that is just, we've seen a lot of matches that have crazy stunts, crazy spots that are just like, you know, just insane for insane's sake. But the story that Mick is able to weave with this match going into it, you know, I mean, his gimmick running a little stale at that point, needing to reinvent himself to kind of put himself back into the main event picture, you know, so there's personal stakes for him. And of course, the stakes where psychologically, Mick is a very unique performer in that this is his art, you know, his sort of self-sacrifice theater of cruelty, if you will. That's his performance art. And that's how he approaches wrestling. He approaches wrestling it's not just about the money and the miles, you know, for Mick. It's about so much more, you know, and how he feels that he needs to connect with the audience and to get them to care in such a deep way about him, through his concern and through his death-defying sort of performance. But for me, it's like the story he's able to weave in the ring that night, and everybody, Undertaker, the announcers, everything, is just this incredible organic lightning in a bottle sort of moment where, you know, you have the concern over him and his well-being, yes, but there's also like this unbelievable, that moment when he's on the stretcher and he's being wheeled away and you think the match is over, and then he stands up and reclimbs the cage, and now we're going to, you know, this match is going to resume. It's just one of the more like hair standing on the back of your neck moments in wrestling, because it really does feel, even into 1998, when things are, you know, there's still believability, if you will, or being lost, how you could get lost into the storytelling of the wrestling without thinking about, you know, the booking and things like that. You get lost in that. And that's just a very like relatable and captivating in like a dramatic cinematic capacity. It's like, it just captivates you and just enthralls you that how can this guy who should be dead can get back up again and go into this. And then, of course, we know what happens next. And so for us, like, the challenge was, yes, the story's been told so many times, but like, has it been really told and where one is getting really psychologically deep into what makes Mick tick, you know, in terms of how, why are we doing this? And how is it important to him, and how has it defined him? And also, what's the sort of quote unquote, for lack of a better term, the dark side of it? What are the effects that he's still feeling today from performing in this match and others like it? And his family, who's sort of along for the ride and having to co-sign, his pursuit for greatness in this capacity. And so, so we looked at it as a family story, but also the challenge was, can we make 1 hour of the show about one match? And it's not Mick's story. You know, it's not his entire story. It's not that. It's literally just this match. And so we wanted to show and like live in this match, spend time in this match longer than the actual duration of the match, you know? We wanted to really live into every second, every beat, and also talk to the people who were there on the ground and get unique perspectives. So, of course, Jim Ross returns. You have Gerald Briscoe, you know, who's basically at Gorilla during this. And then you have I think he might have actually been in the truck. And then we talked to, first time on the show, very exciting, Francois Petit, who was sort of the...
Oh, wow.
Who is, yeah, you know, he's in the back. People would sort of know him as like kind of their doctor at the time, but he really was sort of like a physical therapist guru that would sort of, fix you in a chiropractor sense when you were sort of broken down and beaten down. And he, obviously, you see him many times during that match coming out, trying to revive Mick or to help him kind of come to and find out how serious of what's going on. But I also didn't know, in talking to him, he's in a fantastic interview. He kind of steals the show in this episode. But I actually didn't know that he played Sub-Zero in the first Mortal Kombat film. I had no idea that was a fact.
Interesting character.
So to me, I think this is just sort of an elevated sports doc look at this unbelievable match, like you would an unbelievable sports game, and just looking into all the stakes and the thrills and the human cost of all of this. And for me personally, I'm so excited for people to see it because I think it ranks at near the top of some of our all-time episodes that we've ever done. I think it's just it's great. And let's not take for granted, there's still people out there who don't know what that is, you know, and they don't know what the Hell in a Cell match is. Because we do have a lot of people who watch the show who are not fans of wrestling or don't have no history, personal history with it, you know? So,
yeah, I think it's also a match that it clicks so much because of Mick and his story that you go back the year prior and you have the Jim Ross, Mick Foley sit down interviews and introducing the Snuka influence coming off the cage. And now here's his story. And I think for a lot of wrestlers, it's an interesting look of, would you compromise your career for this endearing legacy? And I think for a lot of them, that would be a transaction that they would consider. Like, this is going to be an all-time moment that you are attached with, that you will forever be remembered by, even though I think Mick would admit he was never the same after this match. And that's sort of the compromise you make in this. But he walks away with like his big Snuka moment and a legacy that's always going to be attached to him.
Yeah, and that's definitely one of the dangers or the cautionary tale behind this whole story is, you know, yeah, Mick is kind of ultra qualified, let's say, to do something like this in the fact that, you know, he's a unique breed of wrestler, you know, who can endure something like that, but also who can bring the right performance and the gravitas and, you know, be able to make these death defying spots work in the context of a storyline or wrestling psychology. You know, it is so well thought out, despite it being insane, you know, and I know just that it inspired an entire generation of the up and coming next generation who saw that and thought, well, I have to do that because it raises the bar, and the bar is now raised. And then if that's the danger with wrestling, is everyone gets desensitized to the next crazy thing. And then we have to outdo ourselves, Mick included, you know, and that's sure what would happen, of course, at Royal Rumble, you know, just a few months later. But yeah, so that is sort of the cautionary tale aspect of it. But yeah, for that, it's just, to me, it's one of my favorite matches of all time, just purely based on its capacity to tell an unbelievable story in and out of the ring, before and after and during. Yeah.
Was it daunting, exciting, or both to have to approach the recreation of the scenes? Because just in the trailer, it looks really cool. And the real thing is so visually spectacular. What was kind of that process of how do we recreate this?
I have to say that the team did a hell of a job on that. Really, truly impressive work on trying to recreate that, because we knew in order to make this feel as dramatic as possible, because normally we would probably just live in the archive of the match, because what's better than the actual match itself? But for this, we knew we had to kind of bolster that with something more. And so we wanted to embrace the challenge of trying to recreate these moments. And again, it's not easy, especially just the scale of that cage and the scale of everything. So there were like pieces that were built of the cage, like just little corner pieces, you know, or trying to emphasize the things you might not see on camera as well. Like, for example, as they're walking across the cage, you know, in our show, you see the zip ties bursting, you know, in macro focus, you know, which is a crazy thing that that's how they adhered the cage, the top of it. And like things like that. So it was just really about focusing on these little individual moments. But the scale of what our team was able to accomplish in the studio to recreate such an iconic thing that we all know, I was unbelievably impressed. And it's like, you know, you hear in the episode Mick talking about how when he was thrown off the cage, it felt like, you know, time stopped. And of course, when you hear like a line like that in the interview, it just immediately stimulates the creativity of what we can do in the studio. So it was like, okay, let's get a phantom camera that can do like ultra slow motion, you know, and just let's just focus on, you know, Mick, you know, floating in midair and rotating as he's about to hit that table. And yeah, so it all just, you know, for me, it's some of the best recreations we've ever done. I'm not just saying that because I'm here hyping a new season, but really was impressed by just like how what we were able to accomplish with the daunting task of this, like trying to recreate this larger than life thing, man. But it was super cool.
Are you feeling overwhelmed by hormonal changes? If you're a woman, you're not alone. With over 1,000 hormone disruptors in our environment, it's no wonder things can feel out of balance. On top of that, natural changes like PMS, menopause, and other life stages can leave you feeling tired, irritable, and trapped in a constant battle with your body. But here's the good news. You don't have to suffer through it. Hormone Harmony by Happy Mammoth is here to help. This herbal formula fine-tunes your hormones, balancing estrogen, testosterone, and even stress hormones like cortisol, which can contribute to weight gain, racing thoughts, poor sleep, and more. With over 40,000 five-star reviews and a bottle selling every 24 seconds, the results speak for themselves. Ready to feel like yourself again? For a limited time, get 15% off your first order at happymammoth.com using code NEXTCHAPTER at checkout. Visit happymammoth.com today and get your old self back naturally.
Your old or broken phone can let you down when you need it most.
Perfect.
But at Verizon, trade in any old phone from our top brands and get the most for it, up to $2,000 in value, for an amazing new iPhone 16 Pro with Apple Intelligence and a new line on my plan, and iPad and Apple Watch Series 10. That's like a 3-for-1. And you can get it on any plan. At Verizon, trade in your old phone for a brand new iPhone 16 Pro, iPad, and Apple Watch. The other guys won't give you that. Visit Verizon.com today. Additional terms apply. Service plan required for Apple Watch and iPad. Up to $2,000 value based on iPhone, iPad, and Apple Watch.
Taxes was feeling so stuck. Sitting in traffic, squeezing into a parking spot, all to squeeze in getting tax help during your lunch break. Now Taxes is a TurboTax expert who does your taxes for you, while you go about your day getting real-time notifications about their progress and the most money back guaranteed. Now this is Taxes, Intuit TurboTax. Get an expert now on TurboTax.com. Only available with TurboTax Live Full Service. Real-time updates only in iOS mobile apps. See guarantee details at TurboTax.com/guarantees.
One other subject I want to ask you about, a lot of the stories that you'll do, it's sort of you have the distance and time from when a story has occurred to reassess it. With Billy Jack Haynes, this is an ongoing murder case. So tell me just a bit about tackling that, where it is ongoing and it's a relatively fresh story of his arrest.
Yeah. So back when a few years ago, when we were doing Tales from the Territories as our kind of spinoff show with $7, there was an episode we did on Portland wrestling. And around that time, we were trying to get Billy Jack on that panel, because, you know, it was a round table show where people were sharing stories of old from the territory era. And we had made contact with Billy Jack around that time, and had expressed, you know, wanting him in there. I can't remember exactly for what reason it didn't happen, but he was unable to join us for that shoot. Maybe it was like last minute or something that he finally got in touch with us or something. But it was right around then when the thought of doing an episode on him would have been interesting. Now, this was before, of course, the death of his wife, which, you know, is why he is sort of incarcerated at the moment and being charged with manslaughter or second degree murder, or whatever it is. That was before then. And because, you know, he was a compelling interview subject when you would see him in shoot interviews and you would see him out there talking wild and weird sort of conspiracy theories and stories, and especially about how, you know, he had alleged that he was part of this crazy story involving the sort of boys on the track story, the story about how these kids were tied to the train tracks and killed during a drug deal gone wrong. And Billy Jack alleged that he was there during that transaction, you know, and had all this, you know, these documents and facts and information to back that claim up. But it was kind of weird that he was coming out now and sort of exposing all that. Kind of had Marty Jannetty-ish vibes, you know, in terms of what he was doing there. So we thought he'd be a compelling subject to kind of, maybe we could approach it in a similar way that we did the Marty Jannetty episode, where it's kind of separating fact from fiction. Where do you draw the line? It's like, okay, here's the world according to Billy Jack Haynes. And obviously when the news broke about what happened, you know, with him and his wife and his wife's death, it was like, oh my God, this is tragic and shocking and insane. And so, but right around that time, he had approached us about doing the episode about him, despite, you know, being behind bars. And so it was this very bizarre.
He had reached out to you while he was incarcerated?
Yes. So it was this like bizarre situation about him being able to tell his story and being approached with that. Where it was like, well, if he wants to tell his story and he wants to speak, let's look into that and see what that would look like. And so it was pretty fascinating in terms of now when we got there and we did the interview with him behind bars, which you'll see in the episode, for obvious reasons, there's only, you know, certain things he can and cannot talk about because he's obviously being advised by counsel. But he still went through with the interview. And then, of course, we contacted a lot of people, you know, contemporaries of his in the business, people that knew him, to try and sort of understand how we got here. Right. That was kind of the thesis of the episode. Not so much about deconstructing what happened, because that is an ongoing case. And we don't know what the result is, that what that's going to be. It hasn't gone to trial yet. But it is sort of an examination of Billy Jack as a person and sort of all the events in his life that have happened and trying to separate fact from fiction. Because there is, like, on one end, you'd see him talk about something and you're like, there's no way that could possibly be true. You know, him kind of, you think maybe he's inserting himself into this very elaborate, sensational story involving underworld types or criminals or, you know, organized crime folks. But then you meet and talk to somebody who's investigated Billy Jack and can provide photographic evidence of him getting, you know, essentially beaten by an organized crime family. And you realize, well, maybe there is some truth to him being part of this weird criminal underworld. And what does that mean then for everything else? And it kind of throws everything else into, you know, like up in the air. So it is a fascinating story. It's somewhat of a frustrating story in terms of trying to get at the truth of where it is, and it's probably somewhere in the middle. But we've never shied away from trying to tell a story that way. We do always leave kind of things in the hands of the viewers, and I think this one is definitely another instance of that. Something never thought we'd have the jailhouse interview as a bucket list.
That's what I was going to ask. I think this would be a first for you guys.
It's a first. Yeah, it's a first. There were talks where we were trying to get Tammy Sitch for the Chris Candido episode, and there was a path to make that happen, but ultimately it didn't happen. And then this was just like, yeah, wild that it happened, but it happened.
Yeah. Here are the questions I had for you. We haven't had you on since the Netflix release of the Mr. McMahon series, and I wanted to get some of your thoughts just overall. Obviously, it was a very widely distributed series that came out. What were some of your takeaways of the series that you got to see?
Well, you know, it's as a fellow wrestling documentarian, you know, I can sympathize a lot with what I'm assuming, because I don't know, but I can surmise. I can sympathize with the fact of, okay, you're getting access to Vince McMahon to tell this story or to tell his story. And, you know, that's compelling in its own right. And you're making this film about him, and you're doing this, you're along for this ride for a few years. All of a sudden, serious allegations hit, throws everything, you know, up in the air. And then
you're, withdraws.
Yeah, he withdraws. So you're shut out. And you're trying to, you've spent all this money, and 9 times out of 10, just from my own personal experience, when you've probably spent money like that, there's no more to get, you know, usually, especially with maybe something that's also ongoing. 'Cause I know, like, there's a lot of people who want to have us cover certain stories that are ongoing, you know, and it's almost a fool's errand to do something that's ongoing. But it's also impractical, because you can't usually get people to speak if there's an ongoing legal situation. But it's also, like, dangerous to look into something as it's happening. We just talked about the Billy Jack story. But, you know, and I can even see, like, maybe there was a version where if we waited one more year, it would have been more compelling. But it's tricky to do things as they're unfolding. So they're kind of stuck in this unenviable position of having to... I know with working with a network, you just got to deliver. If we spent this money, we got to deliver something. And I'm only assuming that from that point, it was like, okay, we have to pivot and we have to, you know, address these allegations, but we have this whole thing that we've just worked years on. And at some point, the powers that be are just going to be like, this has to be what it has to be. And that's it, you know? And I'm guessing that's what happened. My personal opinion on it, even as somebody who has made docs, you know, just as a, from a fan point of view, it's like, I think, you know, there is fatigue around, and I'm saying this as the guy who's putting out the Hell in the Cell thing next week, but there is some fatigue around that overall WWE story that we've kind of heard. And, you know, I would have loved if they just did away with all of that, just hindsight 2020, and we just would have gotten a story about Vince McMahon, just him and the portrait, the sort of complicated warts and all, whatever you want to call it, portrait of him, and less about the history of the company, because I feel like that's the thing they had that was like the holy grail access, right? That's the thing they had. And I think just diving into his own personal history, if he was willing to go and be as transparent as possible about that, would have been the most compelling thing as a doc. I feel like the sort of multi-episode thing, getting into the history of the company, felt like, I know for many fans like myself, it was like semi-frustrating because we'd seen that so many times. But also I can sympathize at the same time as someone in the industry. Like, I'm sure that there was a lot of situations that occurred there where they didn't have much control over, or they, you know, at a certain point, it was just a factor of the bad timing and all that stuff. So, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it was almost like everything about the documentary almost became the story behind the story. Like, here you are, you're getting into business with Netflix and you're going to launch it. And here is a 6-part series that WWE didn't even promote on their end. I mean, it's more so interesting the distance they've created with Vince McMahon as well. That was fascinating as well. If you were similar to this kind of WWE documentary fatigue that some have had, they're talking about this Drive to Survive vehicle that they want to create with Netflix. And we've kind of talked about this, is that, you know, so many of these performers, it's just, there's that on button. And I think the audience right now, they're craving a bit more depth when it comes to these WWE series. I think it's part of, you can watch like this LFG series. And in 2001, this would have been really novel and cutting edge. And I think people have seen so much. They're so aware that they want, I think, a deeper look at some of these performers. So when you look at the idea of trying to replicate a Drive to Survive, like, what would you be looking for just as a consumer to see that would be new in terms of the interpretation of these performers?
Well, yeah, I mean, I feel like, you know, the reason we wanted to make our show in the first place was born out of this idea of not wanting to, because, you know, there is a perception, and I get that that is related to the name of our show. You know, maybe hindsight 2020, Dark Side of the Ring wasn't the right title because it created such a specific box or stigma that what our show can be and should be, right?
But it also captures people as well. I think, like, there's the double-edged sword, I think you can argue.
It is. But it does create this kind of perception that, like, it's expose or it's, you know, looking to somehow expose how the wrestling business is a bad thing, right? And that wasn't at all what our intention was. It's just like, you know, and you realize that after something you do gets out into the world and people react to it. Of course, that's just natural. But going back to your question, it was like, for me, the whole reason we started this show was born out of being huge fans, growing up sort of idolizing these superstars, but also wanting to know so badly, like most fans do, what the real story is and the human story of this person. Who was this person as an individual, like a Macho Man Randy Savage, like a huge, colorful, larger-than-life person? Like, who is Randy Poffo, you know, when the cameras aren't on? Is he the same? You know, what makes him, what are his trials and tribulations, for better or for worse? You know, what are the elements that make him a human being like me? And part of the reason we were so into wanting that was because up until that point, you'd never really seen much of a documentary look, especially, if anything, a well-produced documentary look that had sort of investigated that or looked at that. And that was sort of the thing that we were craving as fans. So I feel like that's kind of the big secret to all this is, you know, sometimes when we look at the heroes of our past and the people we looked up to, it might not check every box of being, you know, this person was a perfect saint and everything they did was a perfect decision and they looked great. And, you know, and so sometimes it might, you know, think to shareholders, it might not be the best look for the company, but at the end of the day, it's the most compelling story. And that's what's going to get people interested. I mean, to be quite honest. So that was something and that we just wanted to see, you know, because WWE for so long had sort of owned the game as far as docs about wrestling, you know, for the most part. Right. So that was kind of like the whole strive for us. So I guess, like, moving forward with docs, it's like, as a fan, to separate myself, like, that's what I want to see. Like, I want to see, I want to go beyond where they are as performers and how it relates to the storyline. We're so far past that, you know, in my mind. And I do want to see how the sausage is made, you know, and all that stuff. And I do want to get to know these people as people. And I feel like that's the thing that helps to get wrestlers over. It had at one point, you know, and I still think it can, you know, and I still think that's how I would captivate an audience.
I think it's like removing that gloss factor that this is such a industry that presents you such a packaged product that when you can unpeel that, that's when you get to the real story that I think is captivating. And I think that's what you guys have tapped into, is kind of having that grittiness to these characters, these stories, and who are these people, getting to the core of a very protected group of individuals.
Exactly. And I think embracing that grittiness and the realness, like in almost a shocking way, I feel like would turn some heads, based upon, you know, what the previous regime, like sort of what the ethos of the previous regime was, you know, at WWE. And I think the more to just break that mold and to get gritty and not to be afraid of anything is what would, I think, captivate a lot of a newer generation of people.
It's all coming up, premiering this Tuesday, 10 p.m. Eastern time, with Mick Foley, Hell in a Cell, kicking things off. And as we mentioned, some very compelling topics. the first ever in-prison interview in Dark Side of the Ring history. Tony Halme, that should be a fascinating one. Eddie Gilbert. We didn't even mention it. I think Daphne, a really, when she died, and I was just writing about her, it's like outside of a Colt Cabana interview, there was so little to her. And it's like, you know, there's this fascinating story. So I that was another one that jumped out at me. So I think the topic selections, I think these are ones that are, you know, you guys have kind of built your history off of going deep into these subjects. And I think everyone is kind of intrigued by just the wide variance that I think we'll see in this season.
Yeah, no, for sure. And the Daphne episode in particular is definitely probably the most emotional episode of, you know, of the new season. Like have a box of tissues ready, of course. Again, somebody who like you couldn't find anybody to say a bad word about, like a John Tenta or an Owen Hart, you know. She was such a beloved person, and it was such a, you know, it's such a tragic story, of course, too, what happened to her. And again, it was one of those cases where a lot of fans were sort of petitioning us to cover this story. And I was very hesitant at first because I was so worried about not sensationalizing, you know, the events of what happened at the end of her life and things like that for the sake of television or whatever. But it's when you do get to speak with people who are close to her and, you know, the importance of having the conversations, you know, around struggling with mental health and the other things that, you know, were happening in her life from, you know, from bipolar disorder to the things that happened in the ring, the injuries that she suffered. And for me, it was very important to only tell this story if we could do it from sort of the inner circle, if you will, like her family participating, which is amazing. You know, her Daphne's brother is in it, and he's incredible. Daphne's father is in it. He's amazing. So that was the only way I think it was right to handle the story. And I'm very proud of the fact that the episode really feels like you're in the inner circle of Daphne and kind of, you know, going through the emotions and how, you know, how she touched everyone for the positive, but then also, you know, the tragedy of her loss is something that everyone is still, obviously it's very fresh and something that they're still processing and always will be. But, you know, it also is another look at how difficult it is for women in the industry, you know, especially during that time to find a place to find, you know, like to kind of, you have to put yourself in a position to kind of be ready to say yes to everything, even though it might be insane, you know, just because the scarcity of roles for women, I guess, in wrestling at that time. So yeah, that episode is definitely one that I think is going to hit pretty hard. Yeah, so there's that one, but we would be remiss if we didn't mention your debut on our show. Oh. we do have to mention that. It's the elephant in the room. No, I'm just kidding.
I didn't know if I'd make the cut or not.
Oh, you definitely made the cut. Yes, you were a huge help to the episode, and of course we're talking about the Muhammad Hassan episode, which again, that's another story that was. The fans had every year, it was Muhammad Hassan. And for some reason, I thought that this episode would just could not sustain itself for an hour or something. Like I kind of felt that it wouldn't quite be enough for a full episode. And boy, oh boy, was I wrong. Just because, and completely admittedly, I wasn't watching wrestling during that time. That was kind of a black hole of when I was tuning out of wrestling. So I didn't live through it, so I wasn't familiar with every piece of archive and match, like all the matches.
Go do a rewatch of 2005 WWE, and you will have about eight seasons of
yeah,
content.
I bet. That's probably why we haven't covered a lot of that stuff. So I was in the dark a little bit, and then going through the episode, obviously Mark Capani, who portrayed Muhammad Hassan, fascinating story there. And you look at it, and it's this Faustian bargain, if you will, is kind of how I would relate this story. It's almost Shakespearean, you know, in a way where it's like, here's a guy who enters in, you know, OVW has all the great, you know, promise of, you know, of a really great talent for wrestling. And he gets sort of drafted, if you will, to the big leagues. But that's a big asterisk. You know, you're going to get shot right to the top of the card and you're going to get this big push and there's going to be vignettes and there's going to be, you know, all this stuff announcing your arrival. But you have to portray this, you know, really racially insensitive character, this heat-seeking, controversial character that's going to get you in a lot of hot water and piss a lot of people off and stir the pot and all that stuff. And so to me, it's very fascinating seeing just taking a step back from wrestling like that. Boy, this is – talk about a story that only could really exist in wrestling, because it's not like you're playing – as an Italian guy, you're playing a Middle Eastern guy, you know, of Middle Eastern descent in a movie. You know, it's not just that level of awkwardness. It's one step further where you have to portray this character as if it's real. And then outside of the ring, you have to perpetuate that character, you know, and everything that you experience living vicariously through a Middle Eastern American. So to me, just jaw on the floor, captivating as a story, but Mark is an amazing, character in this, and him still coming to terms with his own complicated history of this character, but now he's a school teacher, which is such a fascinating part of this whole story, and working with kids now, and he says whether or not this was a complete disaster, going through the disaster of Muhammad Hassan character led me to the path that I'm on now, and I wouldn't change anything because of that, you know. So that's kind of an interesting, examination at what happened with him. But fascinating story, super, super compelling in terms of just, beyond the realms of wrestling. It's a wild story. And you joined us for that episode, and you're featured in it, and you did a hell of a job in terms of, contextualizing everything that was happening at the time. So I appreciate that.
Not the easiest era of WWE to contextualize. So yeah. As much as WWE is apolitical on screen today, they were not 20 years ago.
No. And we get very deep into that. Yeah.
Well, Evan, as always, super generous with your time. Again, Dark Side of the Ring premiering this Tuesday, 10 Eastern on Vice TV. And it's always great to catch up with you, Evan. All the best, because I know the season. You don't just get to sit back and watch the episodes. You're deep into the editing process.
No way.
How many episodes are locked and done at this point?
I think half of them, as we're talking today, are done. Maybe five or six are done. And then the rest, they're actually today, they just started shooting the reenactments for the last three episodes. So imagine that. Reenactments are not even shot for the last three episodes.
Somebody is playing Billy Jack Haynes today.
Yeah, or Muhammad Hassan might be today. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So so that's happening. I'm still freaking out, but hopefully everything goes according to plan and the episodes turn out well and everyone likes them. And if I can just give a quick shout out to, we just launched today the second season of our Dark Side of the Ring podcast, which is Dark Side of the Ring Unheard, that myself, I do with Jack and JP from The Lapsed Fan. And we just upgraded the podcast to video. So we finally are doing a video version of the podcast that just launched today on Vice TV's YouTube channel. The whole concept of the show is we're going deep into the archives, because we have over 500 hours of interviews now at this point. And we're sort of pulling the best nuggets that have never been aired before. And this week's episode, of course, the first one back is about Mick Foley. And so, course, with the Hell in a Cell match episode coming next week. So fascinating look into Mick Foley that's up right now. And so every Wednesday, new episodes of the pod are dropping. And it's been a lot of fun to look back at all the craziness that we've captured over the years.
Yeah, Jack and JP do phenomenal work on The Lapsed Fan.
They're great. So
definitely check that out, because, these guys are sitting on just a trove of unaired content. So it's a great concept.
Awesome. So thanks,
Evan,
so much.
Thanks, John, so much for the time. It's always great to chat with you.
Appreciate it.
Your old or broken phone can let you down when you need it most.
Perfect.
But at Verizon, trade in any old phone from our top brands and get the most for it. Up to $2,000 in value for an amazing new iPhone 16 Pro with Apple Intelligence and a new line on my plan. And iPad and Apple Watch Series 10. That's like a 3-for-1. And you can get it on any plan. At Verizon, trade in your old phone for a brand new iPhone 16 Pro, iPad, and Apple Watch. The other guys won't give you that. Visit Verizon.com today. Additional terms apply. Service plan required for Apple Watch and iPad. Up to $2,000 value based on iPhone, iPad, and Apple Watch.
Taxes was feeling so stuck. Sitting in traffic, squeezing into a parking spot, all to squeeze in getting tax help during your lunch break. Now Taxes is a TurboTax expert who does your taxes for you, while you go about your day getting real-time notifications about their progress and the most money back guaranteed. Now this is taxes. Intuit TurboTax. Get an expert now on TurboTax.com. Only available with TurboTax Live Full Service. Real-time updates only in iOS mobile apps. See guarantee details at TurboTax.com/guarantees.